I've heard should one go to save the world. Can any group ever justify putting a city of millions at risk in order to save billions on the planet? What if you and only you knew what they were doing and could stop them? Would you and should you? Well, these questions and many more are posed in Sunday Times best-selling author Michael Cordy's latest book. It's called Manhattan Down, set in New York. The city's still in shock after the 9/11 attacks. When it comes under another attack, a mystery one, which causes all but two of its citizens to fall unconscious. Let's find out more as we welcome the author Michael Cordy to the programme. Michael, welcome to Abbey 104.
Oh, thank you for having me. What a great introduction. I'm going to use that. It's great.
It's very true, though, isn't it? This is a story that began in your imagination, but potentially has some very serious messages to give.
Well, I think so, because when the books I always write, I've always tried to write, have at their heart, they're meant to be big, romping, hopefully enjoyable books, but beneath them, I always try and include a few sort of ethical or intellectual calories, if you will, because they're things which really get me going. And when you're writing a book, it has to have some meaning to you. So this book, which came to me during the pandemic, actually, I was having a run in our local park, and I was looking up at how the sky was clear of planes. There was no road noise. I could hear a bird singing. And it was something quite weird and strange. And I felt like I was the only person in the world alive at that stage. And then I imagined if I was somewhere else, which is even more populous, like, for example, the city that never sleeps, and you were the only one awake. And then I imagined, imagined, imagined. And I just read a book about a family that couldn't sleep. It's called it's about it's this awful disease where people die from lack of sleep. And it was and about a whole lot of these weird things came to mind. And I remember running home and thinking, I must write this down. And because it was a pandemic where there are no distractions which normally befall you, I began writing it. And within it there were these big issues of how far would you go if you could tell yourself that you weren't going to do any real damage, you were just going to put the world on hold for a bit while you made everyone stop and go, let's put things right. But of course, things never work out as you planned. You always can tell yourself any story you like to justify things. But I found that, the scale of it, really interesting. But also working out how to make that work really by looking at the science of it all, looking at the politics of it all, and trying to work out if I could take this daft thought in my head and make it say something more than just, an airport thriller might do. But and hence Manhattan Down came to me, and I wrote this book and had these characters in it who spoke to me. And it was one of those rare experiences you have as a writer where you do actually start writing and it does sort of take you away. It's such a hard job sometimes, but sometimes you can really focus on it and you can really and if you do have within it areas which are of interest to you and could have meaning, then even the most exciting thriller gives you more kind of energy to write it because you're trying to say something more than just have fun on the beach, if you know what I mean.
I think what struck me with this is that the beginning premise is that members of the United Nations were suffering from the heat in New York, and they were really starting to realize that actually, despite all the politics, there probably is something in this climate change issue. So you'd started with a group of people who were starting or beginning to seriously believe that there was a problem. And then all of this happens,
Yeah,
and
well,
you.
it's kind of it kind of reinforces the kind of the gradual awakening, if I can talk about, because the whole book's really about being asleep, being awake, being aware, not being aware. And we live in a world now which has got even worse, where there's so many, well, lies is the only way you can put it, and you're never quite sure what the agenda is, whether it's kind of ignorance or whether it's out of genuine desire to protect interests or whatever. And politicians who are the not, not notoriously keen to say whatever they think most people want to hear. However, it's not necessarily evil or good. It's just they're not the most reliable sources of empirical information. To have them gradually understand, and then have this happen, and then have them held to ransom, if you like, within the hold of 4 million people in Manhattan, of which every world leader there as well. Then suddenly we can't really kind of ignore this. You've got to kind of act. And if you had the power to do that, how far would you go? What would you ask? How would you utilize that crisis to make something good happen.
I was struck particularly with the two characters that you have created that remain awake. One is a single mother, Samantha Rossi. The other is a wounded police detective, Nick Lockwood. Now, he wakes up from a coma at the point the rest of the city is going to sleep. So that's a very interesting sort of juxtaposition there.
Yeah, well, I think what behind that for me was A, there was that interesting, the thing which was causing this to people who are awake can also have the opposite effect, apparently, on certain people who've got a certain why they were in the coma in the first place might have been flipped back. But also, I like the whole idea of the contrast between waking and sleeping anyway. And one of the ideas I had in that part, which kind of made no sense, was a kind of a love story. Which was that instead of being divided like Romeo and Juliet between two warring families, the Montagues and the Capulets, imagine if you were divided by two different states, one a person who could never sleep, one a person who could never wake, or if they did wake for a moment to meet, they were doomed to go back to sleep, the other person was doomed to stay awake. And there was something nonsensical and fuzzy logic in it, but there was something quite nice about, again, playing with that idea about people who. Literally are waking and literally can't sleep. And then this whole idea about a well that doesn't wake up to the issues that are, they were literally sleepwalking into or metaphorically sleepwalking into disaster. So again, yeah, somebody waking up from something which is putting him to sleep. I like the kind of irony in that. And it also helped propel him onwards because part of this game is to make your characters do what they're supposed to do, not just have the author going, I want you to turn left here, please. You want them to do that. And then the reader goes, yeah, I get it, rather than thinking they're being the character and them are being manipulated by a sort of another person, if you know what I mean.
You brought a lot of your family experiences into this. You talk about fatal familial disorder and particularly reflex anoxic seizures, which
Yeah.
your daughter has suffered from. And it's quite a rare, let's be honest, I hadn't heard of it
Yeah,
until
and did
I
I.
started looking at the book.
Yeah, well, there's a very serious disorder, which luckily no one I know has, which is one character. But this one of the characters, the daughter of the protagonist, Zoe, she has something called, as you say, reflex anoxic seizures. Which, when my own daughter first had this, when she was very young, and then she had a couple of, you basically go into a fit. Your heart and your brain stop blood for a bit. I mean, it can be a minute, and as a parent, it's absolutely terrifying. And I remember us going to a paediatrician. And normally, when you go in there with a lump or something, they say, oh, it's probably nothing, but let's get it checked. They start at the lower level and build up. They went
Yeah.
straight into her, she's probably got epilepsy. She'd probably have to wear a crash helmet, probably get brain damage. And it was like, what? But she only has it when she's feeling a bit poorly or a bit under the weather. And then we learnt, thank God, that it was this other thing, which is still not great, but you tend to grow out of it. It's quite short term. It doesn't damage you. You just have to make sure you're in a safe place. It exhausts you, but you are vulnerable though. And when I was having this character and I was trying to sort of get this daughter to be functional and heroic, but also have a vulnerability to them, which isn't a weakness, but it's a way of showing strength, if you like. And I talked about it with my wife's idea, actually, saying, why don't you talk to Phoebe? And Phoebe said, look, I'd love it. She loves storytelling too, and she got it. But also, she loved the idea of being able to tell her dad, no, you got it wrong. No, it's more like this. It's more like that. And also, what I think is good about talk, you either feel bad when you write about stuff because you make it real, or you feel good about it because you give agency and you make a victim a hero, and you turn something which is a vulnerability into a just a lack of armor. They can still fight the fight. They can still be brave, even more so. And so all that I liked. Plus, it's an intro. Most of my books are peppered with things I never heard of. Like you said, I'd never heard of it. I love discovering new things. And if they're plot irrelevant, they make it even more sort of, more interesting. Because you have either whether it's a new technology, whether it's a rare disease, whether it's a new place, it excites me as the writer. And hopefully you can convey some of that to the reader. And if you can shed light on a disorder that's rare, but people who do have it, it's very, very concerning until you realize it has got certain sort of, it's not as bad as people say. That's no bad thing either. That's no bad thing either. Yeah.
Well, the book is called Manhattan Down. It's written by our guest today, Michael Cordy. Michael, it was published on the 8th of May. What are you working on now then? You've got one in the
Well, that's a
pipeline?
Well, there are two funny questions you get asked always like this. It's like, what's your favorite book? And you always say it's the one I'm writing now. And the other one is, and the other one, but I was told when I first finished my first novel, was, don't worry about it, write your next one. So I've got one out now, and I've got one I'm writing now, and I'm trying to get back to. And yeah, it's again, it's got big themes, and it's about big issues. But the weird thing about this game is I have all these silly ideas, and I'm really excited about it. And then someone goes, yeah, somebody's doing that, or yeah, we've read about it, which is great because it shows you that they're grounded in something. But these days, with all these billionaires around and all this, and the science going really, really getting more and more extensive, it's very hard to have something truly original. But I'm still working on it. I'm still working on it.
Well, you've got a very good bibliography so far: the Messiah Code, the Crime Code, the Lucifer Code, the Venus Conspiracy, the Source, the Color of Death, and now Manhattan Down. I'm sure the next one will be as successful. Michael, please do come back onto the program when that's ready, and we'll have another chat.
Thank you very much indeed. It's been a lovely, lovely chat. Thank you very much.